This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
So if we want to get something done like a cycle path, we've got to get the highways department, which is in the county council, to design it. Even if we're funding it, they may not have the resources to put into that. So sometimes things are held up just by the structure of local government, and that needs to be kind of unpicked to get stuff to happen. That's one of the major frustrations that we have.
Welcome back to season two of the Tread Lightly podcast. If you thought season one was just about recycling, hugging trees, think again, because this time we're taking things up a notch, talking about everything from how community shapes our planet to why faith might just have something to say about the environment, and even digging into the quirks of human behaviour.
I think we all realised quite quickly that the environmental conversation is way too big to keep simple. So we're diving in headfirst at the deep end. Buckle in, because this season we're going to get real. Let's go.
Let's do this. Hello and welcome back to this episode where Liz and I sit down and have a cuppa with the boss man that is Andrew Mellon, the leader of Mid Suffolk District Council, the council that has been under the Green Party majority control since the 2023 election, with, drumroll please, 24 Green elected councillors. We chat to him and hear about how they've made changes to the way that they run, things that are going well, and also chat to him about some of the challenges that they face. It has been a really interesting episode, and we really hope that you can take some inspiration and some hope from his message. Hello and welcome back to this wonderful episode where we are joined by Andrew Mellon, who is going to introduce himself, because I do not want to steal his thunder, because he has an exciting intro to tell you who he is. Hello.
So, yeah, my name's Andy Mellon. I am the leader of Mid Suffolk District Council, and we are the only council in the UK, in fact, the only one in the world, I think, at the moment, that's got a Green Party majority.
Wow.
So there's quite a few councils that have Greens as part of the administration, but we're the only ones with an outright majority. In fact, a supermajority, which people are talking about a lot at the moment.
Talk to me about the supermajority. What does that mean?
Basically, it means you've got, you know, quite a healthy gap between you and the opposition. So we've got 34 councillors on our council, and 24 of them are Green.
Blimey, that's impressive.
It's about 70% of the councillors, yeah.
Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and kind of what got you involved with politics?
Well, so I never intended to be involved in politics. My background is farming, agriculture. So I've been working on farms, been a farm manager. I spent some time doing voluntary work in Africa, sort of in the agricultural line and in relief work. And then having moved back to Suffolk, where I grew up, I always got involved with the local Friends of the Earth because I was interested in those kind of issues, always have been. And the sort of that gradually sort of morphed into being asked to stand as a candidate for the Green Party in local elections. So I did that a few times with no intention of getting elected, just a paper candidate. And then I think the fourth time I did get elected. And
did that take you by surprise? Did you have a feeling the fourth time was going to be lucky, or did that take you by surprise?
Yeah. Things were just sort of flowing my way gradually. So I came second every time, and then I think the fourth time, yeah, the boundaries had changed a little bit and it was in my favour, and the existing councillor was standing down, and it just all came together.
Who did you take over from, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, like many of our seats here, pretty much all of our seats have been taken from the Conservatives. So we had quite a long-standing Conservative who stood down, and I took his seat.
Wowzers. So my geography is not that great. So we're in Raynham in Kent, and I don't know much about Mid Suffolk. So could you give us a bit of a rundown of, like, what's the deal up there? What's going on? Why have you been able to make this happen where you are?
Well, I can't really explain it. Mid Suffolk, we're in the middle of East Anglia. We're a rural area with some market towns. Biggest town is somewhere called Stowmarket. Not a big place.
Oh, my
it's
friend from uni lived in Stowmarket.
That's a lovely town.
Okay. I didn't know she lived in...
That's right in the heart of Suffolk. Yeah, and we're 100,000 people live in our district, 43,000 homes, very rural area. And we first got someone elected as a Green Party councillor in 2003, a friend of mine, Andrew Stringer. And we're just basically growing from there. We went from 1 to 2 to 3 to 5 to 6 to 12 to 24. So once people saw the impact of having a Green councillor, they liked it and they voted for more of it.
That is fascinating.
That's a good advert.
Those numbers are imprinted on your mind, aren't they, to watch that growth? And I guess watch that you do good stuff and then it grows from there. Like people trusted in you, yeah. And then it went from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, this is traditionally very, you know, it's a conservative area. We don't have any Labour councillors here. We've got a few Lib Dems. But basically, I suppose our rise has coincided with the Conservatives over the last 14 years or so going down. No doubt they'll come around and grow again. But at the moment, things have been very much in our favour.
And you mentioned that the environment was obviously high on the council's agenda and high on your agenda. And when you've been interviewed previously, you've said you're very clear that you don't want people to feel that they're being told what to do. Obviously, that's worked because people have trusted in you doing that. How have you achieved that? How do you convince people that the green agenda doesn't mean that they're just going to get told all the things they can and can't do?
I think it's a feeling that we realise that preaching at people isn't going to work. We've got to provide the sort of framework and the circumstances in which they are able to make the right sort of choices. And that's not going to be easy because, you know, for a long time, the environment hasn't been on people's minds. It hasn't been an urgent issue. I think it really is urgent now. And people haven't got a lot of information about what the right thing to do is. So if we can sort of fill that void a little bit, give them the information, give them the opportunities, I think people will often make the right choices. But we are kind of still swimming against the tide of a, you know, society that is consuming the planet at rate of knots. So, you know, we've got a long way to go. But, you know, winning an election is kind of the easy bit. Changing people's habits of a lifetime is going to be much, much more difficult.
Yeah. Do you know what? One of the things that we love doing is speaking to people from all over the country and just learning from them and hearing about their experiences and kind of seeing the things that have worked for them, the things that have like not worked for them, and recognising that not every each community is distinct on their own. There isn't, you know, any one community that is the same, but just being able to learn from each other and kind of have these conversations has been really fruitful for definitely for us, and then being able to share that through this podcast with people that live in Raynham. And one of the conversations that we have a lot is around public transport. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got responsibility for your bus services in the district, and you're keen to work on public transport schemes. Is that right?
That's not quite right. We basically, the responsibility for bus services sits with the county council,
right?
But they are basically strapped for cash, like a lot of county councils. They have huge demands on their resources, so it's a case of us almost having to sort of move into that space to sort of kind of backfill what they used to do. And of course the whole kind of commercial bus sector really took a knock during COVID. You know, people were told, you know, this disease around, if you sit on a bus with someone you could die, you know. So unsurprisingly, it really kind of killed off a lot of the sort of services were just about commercial. But yeah, we are moving into that space. We've been able to put around £600,000 worth of funding into community transport. That's just gone out to tender fairly recently, and we're just waiting for the final sort of procedure before we allocate that money and hopefully get some new services on the road. But I think we had to sort of move beyond the traditional kind of bus service and look at other models, whether it's demand responsive transport or community initiatives, because I think there's a whole load of different ways this could happen other than the sort of traditional bus service that we've all got used to in the past.
And do you think that's because you're rural? Because thinking about the challenges that we've had locally trying to encourage public transport, trying to get our buses, we've got a very dirty fleet, and trying to get people to recognise that actually the fleet is old and quite polluting in itself. There just doesn't seem a huge appetite for improving local bus services around here. But we're quite a linear town, so the five towns where we live are estuarial towns, so they don't have a town centre as such, which feels as though it could be potentially a limiting factor that you don't have a town centre and then bus services that go out with it. But I guess you've got different challenges because you're so rural.
Yeah, and the trouble is once the service goes, then it almost becomes, you know, anyone who lives out in the countryside like I do, you've almost got to have a car to sort of survive out here. You know, people cycle, people walk, but if you're going to go to the supermarket or the doctors or all kind of access services, you've got to be able to get there, you know, in all weathers. So it becomes almost the default that you've got to have a car. And once you're used to driving around in a car, why would you necessarily go
jump
back to
on a bus? Yeah.
Yeah, but that leaves out the whole section of the populace who haven't got access to a car, who can't drive, they're too young, too old, or or for whatever reason, you know, can't afford a car, what do? And we end up with having to have sort of good neighbour schemes and that sort of thing, which are running people to hospital or to doctor's appointments, which is okay, but it's not ideal.
That's good that you're thinking more broadly, though, because I honestly, apart from a community sort of public transport system, you know, like being able to buy a minibus and kind of have people, do you know what I mean? I can't think of any other scheme that could run alongside that. So I'm glad that there's people like you that's got your brain, that have got officers that are able to kind of like research this stuff and kind of do it, because yeah, you've got to think outside the box sometimes.
Get creative.
I mean, one thing that has come along, and it's not my idea, but it's really great, is we've got kind of some school minibuses that take kids to school, and then they're kind of redundant during the middle of the day. So some villages have clubbed together to sort of help fund kind of sort of bookable minibus service on a couple of days a week, using that those school minibuses, which are just basically not being used in the middle of the day. So
that's really interesting. Kind of, so would that be little, for kind of a group of older people going to an event, or
well, going into town for shopping?
Or, that's really good.
So that scheme is I was able to give it a little bit of support to get it going from my locality budget, and it seems to have flown, which is great.
That is really good, actually. I've never even thought about that, using school buses and using them during different times. Why does it matter that the council's gone green? Cool. What a question.
Let's go deep.
Yeah, big question. I mean, I get the point that we're the Green Party, so people think we're going to be concerned about the environment. But people in all sorts of parties are concerned about it, whether Labour, Conservative, Lib Dem. But it is, I suppose, a kind of key issue for us. And I don't know, we're constantly quoted as being a sort of an exemplar or an outlier, I suppose, because we are the only ones with a majority. But there are, I think there's something like 38 councillors where Greens are part of the administration, and there's 14 where there's a Green leader of the council. So we're not the only ones, but we just happen to be the one that people ever always kind of name check. And I suppose it, in terms of political things, it does sort of signify that these kind of concerns are rising up the political agenda. Bizarrely, the environment, even though to me it's the biggest challenge of our times, it's hardly made it into the
into the discussion, is it,
around this election.
I was going to ask you about that, because it has blown my mind. Obviously you are probably have similar friends to us that are kind of all WhatsApping each other going, hello, where are we talking about this? Like, why? Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
You've got parties sort of saying, well, we need to back off the net zero agenda because it's costing people too much money. And I think the counter argument to that is, well, if you don't do it, it's going to cost you a hell lot more.
Yeah. We have conversations with people who talk about environmental issues. We spoke to a guy called Stuart, who coincidentally is standing as an MP candidate in Gillingham and Raynham for the Lib Dems, but he's really into allotments. And so we had a good chat with him prior to the build up to the election about allotments and his joy of that, but actually talking about how it ticks so many societal boxes to grow your own. So kind of reducing costs, improved well-being, connecting with other people, kind of sharing, reduced pesticide, you know, the list goes on. Actually, so many of these things cross over agendas.
Yeah.
So rather than removing
from well-being. Yeah.
That's what we call co-benefits, isn't it? I think that you do one good thing and it leads on to lots of others.
But rather than removing it, why are we not just driving it into everything? Because it seems to be the environmental box tick so many other elements of society, which is why it's so interesting to view an entire society, entire community in Mid-Suffolk through the lens of environmentalism. And that's why I think it's really interesting to see that you've grown in popularity by seeing the benefits of that, rather than feeling like it's judging and levelling out. People are benefiting from it.
Now, the problem is, I mean, we've been voted in a year ago. We've already got to deliver in this term, you know, otherwise, you know, people will sort of wonder what the point of voting Green was. So we've actually got to kind of make sure that we get some of this stuff done. And that's the real kind of challenge at the moment.
Are you tired of the same old chat about saving the planet? You know, like the reduce, reuse, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to shake things up, because season two of the Tread Lightly podcast is here, and we're diving deeper than your recycling bin.
This season, we're talking about community, faith, and yes, even why humans behave so weirdly sometimes when it comes to conversations about the environment.
Oh my gosh, they do. But there's no boring lectures here, so just real talk. Tough questions and a little bit of banter along the way, because
because let's face it, we all need to lighten up when we're trying to save the planet, right?
So if you're ready to stop tiptoeing around some of the big environmental stuff, get real and join the conversations. Come tread lightly with us.
Catch season 2 of the Tread Lightly podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, like now.
One of my absolute joys of doing this podcast is I love to hear and ask the questions around, give me your good success stories since your time in office. Like, are there stories that stick out in your head? And listeners won't be able to see this, but you've got a little smile on your face. So I wonder if there are any stories that stick out to you that are like, yeah, I am really proud of that, where we've done something really, really good and you'd love to share them with us.
Well, I can give you a couple of examples. One is like a really small thing, which is we've really been struggling with flooding here since Storm Babette last winter, and we just had loads of places where the roads have been flooded and the highways, people have, you know, been really struggling. And so yesterday I was out trying to deal with a couple of persistent flooding spots, just by digging around and poking around in the ditches and looking for pipes, I managed to solve two things which have been annoying me for months and annoying drivers and annoying people, and I managed to get the water away. So I was really pleased with myself about that. And that's just, you know, a local councillor doing the stuff in his ward. But in terms of kind of the wider green administration, I think the thing I'm really pleased about is that we've sort of changed the tone of debate at the council, and that's partly because we've got this big majority. So previous to that, we were a hung council and it was all sort of neck and neck. But we could have taken all the different roles in the council, all the different chairs of the committee, and kept them all for ourselves because we've got a majority. But we chose not to do that. We chose to share some of these out with the other parties, the Conservatives and the Lib Dems.
Wow, that's impressive.
And just try a bit more collegiate and, you know, valuing everyone's contribution, whatever party they're in. So I think that's quite a substantial change, and slightly wrong-footed our opposition colleagues initially. But I'm really proud that we did it. It was just the right thing to do. And hopefully over the longer term, that means that we get a kind of contribution from everyone to the work of the council, whether it's in debate in the chamber or, you know, doing stuff in their wards or sitting on a committee. And I think it's quite a healthy thing, really.
That is so healthy. I am literally, who am I? I mean, I'm just about to say, I am so impressed with that. But there's a little old Katie sat over here. I honestly feel like the conversations we have often with people in our community is, why can't, excuse me for speaking as though you're not here, but like, why can't they just get all together, get on and just crack on and work together? Like, why does it have to be you over there, you over there, you over there? And you have just demonstrated that is exactly what you've done, because it's not about necessarily the actual power. You want to be able to share that out because you realise that everybody's got something to bring to the table and you're giving them a space to be able to do that. I think that's actually bloody amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
It doesn't mean it's always, you know, sweetness and light. We simply disagree about stuff.
Yeah. But that's life, yeah. Though, you're going to, aren't you? But I guess there's a difference between disagreeing where you're one side of the table and now on the other. You're all sat at the same one, so it's like, well, we kind of need to have this conversation. I think, do you realise how much of a big thing that is, or am I naive and that's not actually a big deal?
I think the kind of political tensions arise when a real, like, for example, in the last 4 years before our election, we had a hung council where we, both sides, the opposition side and the administration side, had the same number of councillors.
Blimey.
So it was a kind of real tension. Every time we got together for a council meeting, it was really kind of bumping heads. But I'm not sure that necessarily gave us kind of good governance or good results. But, you know, there are differences in politics. You know, we give different emphases and priorities to things. And sometimes that has to be kind of argued out. But I think if you can do that while still respecting people,
respectful grown adults, you know, yeah.
I think it's helpful. I try to model that. I don't always get it right.
But it's changing a culture, though, I guess, isn't it? You're trying to change. I mean, look at me, I don't actually fully understand politics, but from what I can kind of see on the outside, it's like there is a culture that's been set before us, and I guess you're trying to create a new one. And can you hear my dog in the background there? You're trying to create a new sort of, yeah, way of thinking and working, and I think you should give yourself a pat on the back. And
that's very impressive. Yeah. Impressive, different, you know, bringing your differences together to the table rather than kind of arguing about it.
What are your kind of frustrations? So obviously where you are the first Green Council, obviously that's amazing, but do you find that there are some frustrations and some limiting factors by being so unique?
There are some frustrations. I think some of it is just the pace at which local government works, in our experience, is a bit slow. I mean, those of us who come to this sort of from business or from the voluntary sector, we're used to getting stuff done quite quickly, but you've got to go through those democratic processes, which does sometimes mean things move at a slower pace than you'd like to. And the other thing is, because we're a three-tier system, we've got parish, district council, which is my level, and then the county council, all with differing responsibilities. Working across that to make sure things happen can be tricky. So I mentioned, like, our county council, like many county councils, just doesn't have the funds because there's these huge demands on its resources for adult social care and children, young people. So if we want to get something done like a cycle path, we've got to get the highways department, which is in the county council, to design it. Even if we're funding it, they may not have the resources to put into that. So sometimes things are held up just by the structure of local government, and that needs to be kind of unpicked to get stuff to happen. That's one of the major frustrations that we have.
And what do you think, if you could, I love asking this question all the time, I don't ever ask it to my kids because I don't really want to know what the answer is, but if you could wave like your magic wand, your kind of wishful thinking, how would you use it?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think we just need, in terms of kind of looking at this problem that's facing us of climate change, to have a kind of coordinated approach from government to local government to community to households to individuals, so that everybody thinks this is important and wants to do something about it. And there's so many mixed messages about this, you know, about whether climate change is happening, which I think it clearly is, and scientific opinion is saying that, from how important it is or whether we need to focus on this or whether we should focus on economic growth. I think we just need to clear all that confusion away and have a really kind of clear idea of what the challenge is. And I think people would then face it. I mean, we changed society overnight when COVID came along because it was a challenge we understood and we understood what we had to do. But I think when it comes to this almost bigger challenge, you know, there's so much misinformation out there and lack of kind of direction. And we just need that clear path ahead. And once we see that, I think people would really get behind it, like they did over COVID, like they did back in the Second World War.
Yeah.
You know, we almost need to be on that kind of war footing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's a really good point.
So That's
a really good, so I've never actually put those two together, but you are right. Look how quick the Nightingale Hospital got built. What did it take? A week? Because there was a clear message that, and the same as when he, you know, announced the kind of the pandemic starting, everybody needed to stay at home, and it was, you know, I can't even remember what the slogan is now. It's like it was embedded in my brain. But yeah, you're right. That messaging was so clear. This is where we're going. This is what we're doing. And everybody knew what the risk was and they knew what they could do in the immediacy to keep themselves safe and to tackle it. I think you're onto something. I think I know why you got a job. Clear messaging from the top, trickle down to communities, because communities, I think this is the other thing, is that communities are here at the bottom kind of going, hello, hello, hello. People want to be heard, don't they? And they kind of want to be empowered to be able to take that action and kind of need some sort of encouragement or barriers removed to be able to do that. And so you're amazing at being able to do that where you are. So I think, well done you.
And thank you so much for joining us today. We have been really interested. We've been following and reading up about the work that you're doing. So excited that you are heading it up. And we're going to just watch on over the next year or so just to see what kind of initiatives you guys bring together and how you speak and how you talk about the work that you're doing as well and the kind of the place that comes from. So thank you so much for joining us.
And if we're ever in your area, can we pop in for a cuppa?
Absolutely. There's always tea and cake here.
Yes.
You're very welcome.
Oh, we'll lift this cake. We're coming tomorrow.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe, like Kaylee and myself, even picked up a new perspective along the way.
If you did, do not keep it to yourself. You need to give us a like, rate the podcast and share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And of course, follow us on all of our social media, which is hilarious because we are on LinkedIn, TikTok, oh my gosh, Facebook and Instagram. And you can also stay in the loop for more episodes and updates. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep treading lightly.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.